Welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, March 4th, 2021, otherwise known as Holy Experiment Day. So I guess it's like, you know, in Batman, how they'd be like, holy whatever, Batman.
Wow.
Holy Experiment Day, Batman.
What was your guys' last experiment where you were genuinely not sure how it would turn out, but you went for it anyways?
I mean, this isn't very experimental, but honestly, just doing a room renovation.
Yeah,
like I've never, for as normal as that is, and like for as much as everybody would think it's just like such a jump from furniture to room renovation, it's not really. Like, it's the first time I've ever done something like this.
What about you, Mike? Was it the epoxy sink? That was the big, messy one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm always trying new things. Like, me and Brett poured a concrete slab for the shed like a month ago. That was crazy, and it experimented in a like halfway successful way. Like, the concrete was there but not as flat as we wanted it, you know. Trying things for the first time always is a little iffy. But what about you?
I cut open a windmill blade the other day, which
I saw footage of that. That looked like it actually went well.
Surprisingly, we missed the actual shot where the end fell off.
The muddy shot.
I had the camera guy with me, and we filmed like 99% of the way through, but I had to remove a chunk for it. The fiberglass, I was expecting it to be a uniform thickness. It wasn't. It was like half an inch thick in some places and over 2 inches thick solid fiberglass in other places.
There's got to be a reason, though. I guess like maybe that's where it's like stressed the most.
Exactly. And then there was a middle fin down, and that's what kept bending all my Sawzall blades, is that they were cutting through the outer shell. Then they would hit, if they hit at the right angle, that middle divider, which adds stiffness, they would just bend at the tip. So it was so awkward. You'd be just like, you're like cruising through it and you're cutting blind, right? You're just cutting what basically looks like a 18 inch diameter pipe. So you're just like cruising, moving down through the outer shell, and all of a sudden just like doing, like you absorb all that recoil. And then so I had to actually use the angle grinder to cut out a little chunk out of it so I could see inside. Once I saw inside, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. But I removed one of the chunks, and I was having Shane, my camera guy that I've been using for these kind of projects, and he was like getting some B-roll of just like the thickness of these chunks that I removed. And that's right when the end fell off. So we got most of it, though, but I'm going to cut off another one too. So we'll pick up the shot. And now that I know what's inside, I can cut with reckless abandon.
Mm. Was that the purpose of cutting these ones, to see what they were made of?
Well, this one's going to be a table, but I was very tentative. I wanted to make sure there's nothing in tension, wanted to make sure, you know, you're not set up blade-wise for cutting through fiberglass and all of a sudden hit steel. Right. You know. So now that I know what's kind of the inside looks like, I can come up with a much better strategy. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fiberglass dust, so that part is still kind of tricky to deal with. So I might even bring like a shop vac out there, like a battery powered one, to kind of suck it up as I go. It's outdoors and it tends to be like a brisk breeze, so not too bad. And I'm using a full face shield and a mask, so I don't think I'm having any trouble sort of, you know, respiration wise. But cleaning all that really fine grained fiberglass dust off the tools is kind of a pain afterwards, because it's not like metal dust or sawdust. It gets like a static cling. So like these kind of like synthetic fiber dust, when it's really fine, it just wants to stick to the tool with like static electricity, almost like it's a powder coating or something. So that part was a little bit challenging.
Well, that concludes Holy Experiment Thursday.
Yeah.
that was quite a nice segue.
Best holiday we've ever had.
And wait, there's more.
Yeah. Okay.
So I also experimented with our buddy, Rachel Metz, and we launched a new YouTube channel, How to DIY, where it's basically just on camera of like what Rachel does when she comes over here. She flaps around. She has a good attitude and asks a lot of questions. And we just filmed that with some DIY experiments of me sort of just answering her questions and threw it up. And great so far. So we have a whole new channel that's more of I guess it's like a morning talk show kind of thing. Very kind of Rachel Ray segment, but a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Takeaway, the Limestrong plaster like forms really nicely in molds.
Yeah.
because it doesn't have any rocks, I guess, in it, right? It's like all sand and particle aggregate.
Well, we just used a pigment. We used a pigment with the Quikrete white concrete. So it's coloring agent. Yeah. But they have...
real quick, all of the forms that you were making, that was all concrete, the countertop mix.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That stuff formed really nicely. I thought it was the plaster.
No. And then we just used the Limestrong pigments. They make a really high-grade pigments, and they're kind of expensive, but you don't need that much. So I think if you want to do more of a classical-looking terrazzo, you could do a lot with those pigments and your experiments with white concrete. Actually, that was a good experiment that you did when you sort of did the mixing your own white concrete.
It was, yeah, because it's just... I don't know what it is. Why do none of the concrete suppliers sell like white mix? It's all like, so for instance, like a tint base, something right. where it's a little off white. It's not like a pure, you know,
I'm telling
spot
you,
on.
One of these days, sell it by the 10-pound bag.
I don't think my industrial maker should do that.
Yeah.
He needs a concrete mix. Mike needs his own thing. Not Modern Builds Mike, but.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What have you guys been working on?
Mike.
I'm experimenting on how to put a metal roof onto the shed workshop. Since we spoke last, I had two episodes in that series come out.
Yeah.
And they're blowing up. They're doing really well.
Couple of bangers.
Couple of bangers, certified bangers. I'd been holding on to them for a little while. Felt good to get them released. And so episode 3 in that workshop series is putting on a new roof. I might also include putting on a waterproofing exterior finish on the outside of the shed, just as a couple extra minutes onto the end of it. I don't think it really deserves its own video, but it's coming along pretty well. It's funny, like the whole idea of experimenting and trying new things, it really does make everything take way, way longer. And a lot of that I feel like comes from like not knowing the right steps to do. Chris, maybe you were in the same spot with all this home renovation stuff because you want to do the thing. You want to like whatever the next step is, you want to do it. But there's also like this level of like hesitance, not knowing if what you're about to do is 100% the right step. So taking this roof off, it was missing a ton of shingles. It was weathered. There were some parts in the plywood that were needing patched, all kinds of stuff. And so there was all this conflicting information as I was trying to research, like, what kind of underlayment do I need? If I'm in the desert, do you even need underlayment? Like all the different ways of laying down a metal roof and things. And yeah, it's just funny because I've obviously never put a roof on before, but this is taking way longer than it should just out of all of that like first time trying it scenarios where I put on half the roof to realize that it wasn't as square as it should be. But it wasn't because I messed up. It was just because I referenced one of the edges of the roof rather than making sure that the roof was actually square before I did it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, that's the mistake that you make the first time you do something, and you know to always check your roof for square from now on.
You almost should have started from the middle, right?
I guess. I don't know. But it's just like it's like that learning curve. Anytime you try a new thing for the first time, you make the boneheaded, really silly mistakes. So okay, I'm going through that right now. I feel it.
Just from watching your stories. So I was watching your stories, and Mike's attaching just classic looking corrugated galvanized metal roofing, you know, like this looks like a sine wave. And I noticed something that I never see him do. And he was, you know, you're screwing it down and there's like, you know, 2x4s or 2x lumber that's kind of flat that he's screwing through the metal with self-piercing screws. And they have a rubber gasket on them, which gives you a watertight seal between this hex headed screw and the gasket. It looked like for the first time you were actually paying attention to the clutch on the drill and not overdriving things.
I was like, really feathering that trigger.
I was like, because like Mike's normally like a pretty like cavalier guy, like just gets things done. And yeah, if a few screws get overdriven, no big deal. A little wood putty, you know, he's got other techniques to finish that up. But I was like, look at the store. I was like, I've never seen Mike be so careful with the screws. He's paying attention.
Hey, I'm not kidding, man. I watched an insane amount of YouTube videos and literally read articles like it was 2012, but it's just conflicting information everywhere because there's so many different climates that have a lot of different things that you need to like build in consideration with. So all in all, it's coming together tomorrow, Monday, because we're recording on Sunday like we normally do. I should hopefully have everything down and then that episode will be able to be released, but it's been funny, man. It's just try new things. You always make mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Chris,
yo,
I don't know if you've released By the time this podcast has come out,
it's gonna
your renovation episode is out. It looks great. Like the fireplace around, very modern.
It looks like a fancy hotel.
And doing all plywood for a fireplace, I mean, you said it was a bold move. It's a bold move.
Hey, go bold or...
Stay home?
Stay or go, whatever. Depends where you are, I guess.
Go home to where you renovated.
In your bold fire or unbold house. So yeah, it's all done. I'm just like putting the finishing touches on the video. So it should be out either Wednesday, so yesterday, or Thursday. By the time people are listening to this, it should be out. That's the point. I will say, man, so like putting the finishing touches on everything, like I've had long finishing touches days with furniture projects before, but when you're doing it with a home renovation project, it hits different. Like that, like 12 hour day of just doing stuff. Like the last thing that I had to do was just like all the moldings and painting and just like a 12 hour day of just like crawling around on my knees and doing all that.
And then you're touching up the thing. You're touching up the thing that you just finished touching up. It's like, oh, I got to fix this white paint real quick. And then you accidentally get that onto the trim.
Oh, dude, you know what?
So then you clean the trim to accidentally like dig into the wet paint. So you're like, dang it, I got to do the paint again. Okay.
Dude, so I started that last day at like, I usually wake up about 6:15 and am working by like 7.
Cool.
So that's when I started that day. Got my like last paint on the baseboards. That was the last thing I had to do at like 11 o'clock at night probably. And was like, all right, I'm just going to go like sit down on the couch for a couple minutes and then I'll pull off all the tape. And I just got like too tired. And I was like, forget it. I'll do it in the morning. And then like painter's tape, you know, you're supposed to not let it fully, or I mean, not that it's fully dried by the next morning, but you want to take it off fairly quick. But of course, waiting just made like such a pain in the ass to take off. And then it pulled up some of the paint with it. So then the next morning I'm there again, like doing touch-up painting. It's just like one of those things where like, you can't not do it at that point, but you're just so over it at that point.
Right. No, I get it, man. And it's the light at the end of the tunnel is so far away. It's like so faint, but at the same time, it's just like right there.
Yeah. It's just, oh, come on, just touch up this little paint. So whatever, did it, persevered. Went and bought some stuff, got all like I was showing you guys the thumbnails today because like I'm having trouble deciding on either before or after thumbnail or just like a beauty shot of the whole room. It's hard to encapsulate everything into one photo. Thumbnails is such a, like, why is there no A/B testing yet on YouTube?
Oof. So they could serve up two different thumbnails
However many, like say it was ABC, you'd put them all up there. It would send it out to 10,000 people. Whichever one gets the most clicks and watch time go, okay, that's the winner. And there you go. That way you don't have to, it's like so stressful to be like, what's the good one?
If Tinder has that function, YouTube can figure it out, right?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, seems like it would behoove all of us. Like, you know, they want people to be watching our videos too. And obviously we do. Anyway, that's where I'm at right now. I'll get it figured out. I just got like some last minute things to do on the actual edit itself. And then it'll be a while until I do it. But like the next one on my list will be the kitchen. That's like the last room in our house that really, really needs updating.
Are you going to try and make cabinets?
I think so. I think I want to do like a full on, like, I've never done anything, but I'm really redoing this kitchen.
You're going to get really good at building cases.
Yeah. If you're making cabinets, if you're making your own cabinets, is there any reason to stick to the typical modules? And if you don't stick to the typical module sizes, are there aesthetics that you can get that are different from a normal kitchen that would make the woodworking look better?
I mean, I think the main thing that I would probably do is I would not do face frame cabinets. I would do like inset doors and drawers on everything. So I think just doing that alone is going to make it look a lot more high end and modern. Cause you know, like normally in a kitchen, like there's like huge gaps that are really inconsistent between the doors, especially if it's like between the two doors that are on one module versus if they're on like the next cabinet over. I mean, I guess maybe what I would do before I fully say that I'm going to commit to building my own cabinets whenever the time comes, maybe I would look to see if there's a thing where like I can buy the cabinets and just make the doors. Like that might be a smart move just in saving time. But because otherwise,
cost you that much money to do it too.
You know what? The thing is like building boxes goes pretty quick. Like when I was doing the built-ins, it's always like that first day you get all the boxes built and you're like, I'm going to be done with this thing in 2 days. And then like you spend 8 more days working on all the little detail stuff. So I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't even save that much time. I'll figure it out. Like, I don't even know when I'm going to do it, though, because I got to, like, move the family out for a month, and it'll be a whole undertaking.
If only you were able to get the Winnebago RV.
Yeah, get that.
The Airstream. Yeah, the Airstream RV.
The 80s Airstream. Get the family living in that. That's a good idea, Mike. I think I'm going to do that. I'm pushing that up the queue.
I mean, listen, I did it with my parents. I lived in a travel trailer while they built the house that I grew up in whenever I was like 12.
There you go.
Maybe 10. Boom.
Yeah.
It teaches the kid like some grit, you know, because it's just like some of the amenities you're used to just aren't even available.
Just be like, who wants to go camping in the driveway?
And it's like, no, never again.
Chris, are you going to do all swing doors or you do some cabinets with drawers too?
I don't know. I haven't even really started thinking of it that much. It's definitely like far off on the horizon. That's just like the last thing in this house that hasn't been touched.
Yeah. I think like if you're going to make the own cabinets, I think there's an opportunity to make the kitchen look a little more custom. Like I've done a ton of kitchen designs using like that, you know, Pogan Pole, Balt Up, like all the real high end. You know, $100,000 cabinet packages from all the European manufacturers that are amazing. But even those, they start to look all the same because of the modularity is so consistent. It's always, you know, 36, 30, 24, 18, 16s, occasionally a 14 or a 12 inch wide base with just like different doors of skinning. So the inherent aesthetic of kitchens are, you know, vertical panels about 28 inches high. And about like 16 to 24 inches wide at the most, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a whole bunch of those in a row. And some of them have like tighter reveals if they're nicer. If they're just bad face frame cabinets, they have like, you know, inch gaps that are inconsistent. But changing that inherent modularity where some of the panels are more horizontal, some of them are more square or something like that.
Yeah.
It'll pop from the minute somebody looks at it. It's like, wow. This kitchen's custom. And if you're building your own cabinets and can fit them in through the door, there's no reason not to do a 48 inch wide double sink cabinet or something like that. So look at your existing kitchen layout and figure out like the breakdown. The other trick I would say is talk to Dolores about where everything's currently stored and like come up with like an organizational strategy that like informs that, because if you just go off the existing layout, you might miss some opportunities to either simplify, which will make them look more high end because it's bigger but fewer doors,
right?
Or build in a little more customized storage for specific utensils or pots and pans,
right? Like, I mean, while you were talking right there, I was just thinking of like what are some things that jump right to mind. So like the first thing you said I think would be cool, like mixing in some like sliding and traditional, you know, hinged doors could give a different look. Like even thinking about just where we keep our plates, like, you know, you open up a whole door and like you grab from the same part of the shelf every time you open it. What if there's just like a door that just reveals that little part that you're using 90% of the time that you want to open that door or something like that?
Ooh, baby door.
Baby door, yeah. Door within a door.
Also, if you did some of your like walnut ply, but mixed in with some of the color,
like that's kind of what I want to do.
Yeah.
That I want to do some like pops of color.
That's going to be hot. I'm here for that.
2022, everybody. Mark it down on your calendars.
Perfect. Well, we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, let's take a break and hear a word from today's sponsor. Today's episode of the Modern Maker Podcast is brought to you by Indeed. Hiring is one of those things you do not want to mess up. You need to hire great people if you want to take your business to the next level. And with stakes this high, dun dun dun, there is only one choice: Indeed. Now let me tell you why. Indeed.com is a hiring site that helps you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through the millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly, so you can do the part you really need faster: meeting and hiring great people. Unlike some hiring sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility, delivering a quality shortlist faster. With Indeed, there are no long-term contracts, and you can pause your account at any time. That way, you only pay for what you need. With Indeed Instant Match, you see a list of great candidates with zero wait, and Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. So if you want your quality shortlist fast, you need Indeed. And right now, our listeners get a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/modern. This is Indeed's best offer available anywhere. Get a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/modern. Last time, that is Indeed.com/modern. Offer valid through March 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so we have sort of a topic today, and oddly enough, aligned with the day that it is. So what we're going to talk about is experiments that we haven't done yet, and what are maybe the things that are holding us back from trying them. So I'll go first. I've always wanted to try, have you ever seen where somebody takes like a steel chain and they weld the links together? I've mostly seen it for like a base for like a bar stool. Well, take like a heavy duty steel chain and they'll kind of like twirl, drape it around the floor, and then it'll like stick up like a cobra. And then all the links are welded together. So now it went from a flaccid chain to a rigid base for a stool.
But they weld it to where it still has some swoopiness to it.
Exactly. Right. So you basically, it's like a frozen rope.
Frozen rope. That's a good way of putting it.
So I saw once. So I've seen that idea, and I don't think those things look particularly good. They're kind of like in like rustic places, the type of like steak houses that would put like a wagon wheel on the wall as art.
Yeah.
or like an old shovel and pitchfork.
Yeah. It'll minor themed. Like,
okay. So sidebar, would it be funny if like, will there ever be a point if people hang at like roadside diners or kind of steak houses, like old tools on the wall? Will there ever be a point where like DeWalt and Ryobi's like, just and they're like yellow and green plastic, but like really old, and just like hanging on the wall of like some sort of like diner?
That's the real question. Right? Like, what's the newest thing up there? You think there's some like really, really old like Stanley tools?
So I've seen some hipster coffee shops that have decorated their places with like audio cassette tapes and like old computers.
Yeah.
Like the kind of like original before the IMAX. So for old electronics, those are kind of got a retro vibe that people are starting to get into. So will there ever be a day where the tools are like Chris's Fest tool? So I was like, oh, this is 80 years domino. Old. Let's hang this on the wall.
That was back before we cut all of our wood with lasers.
Yeah.
The laser saw. They used to use circular saw blades.
Look at these primitive metal teeth that spin. Yeah.
I mean, part of me wants... Okay, maybe what it would be is like slightly less on the nose than that. So like maybe we can't see it right now because we're so in it.
Maybe the woodpecker tools.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's like an aesthetic to like pocket knives or something from this time that's like very this time and we don't know it yet. And in 20 years from now, we'll look back and be like, they did look like that in the 2020s or whatever. So maybe something like that, things that are a little more like... artisanal or something than like just
future your future classics,
right
like what is that going to be?
Right,
it's always something I just sort of wonder. But anyways, back to the chains and frozen ropes. So I've seen that, which doesn't look particularly great, but still an interesting technique to take a flexible chain and turn it into a rigid steel structure. On the other hand, I've seen bicycle chain chandeliers, which can look amazing in like a very kind of like gothic heavy metal kind of way. So I've like cleared out the outdoor workshop area and I want to try suspending a piece of steel plate and then almost making a base for a table out of all this heavy chain and then one by one welding all the links together. So it'll kind of look like a chandelier base to a table, but it's going to literally be like hundreds and hundreds of welds. And I know I'll be able to get the chains rigid, but also that tabletop and the chains themselves are going to be super heavy. So it's like when I lower it onto the ground, like I could just see the whole thing kind of like a couple welds breaking and the whole thing just like falling like one of those four-legged robot dinosaurs in Star Wars or something.
Like one of those treeless tree houses.
Yeah. I've been burned.
Too many times.
I've been burned before.
Those things are funny because you got to weld every single chain link. So it's like if you've got 2 feet of chain, that's probably like 40 little baby welds.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
So I want to do it. I'm going to do it.
The way you're thinking of doing it, like, are they all going to, are all of the chains going to like meet at the center of the table and then like sort of like spider web out or something like that, the way a chandelier kind of does that?
So I've been sketching it, but sketching something like that in 2D is really hard.
Yeah.
And modeling in 3D is also hard because you, the chains have a certain tensility or flexibility to them. So you kind of let, let them have to gravity hang and find their position and then fix them. So it'd be a hard thing to accurately 3D model with my level of skill, at least. So what I got was I ordered the chains. So this is how I walk myself up to doing the experiments. One, spend money. And then when it gets here, you're like, oh,
now
I don't
to.
Have that delay of ordering the parts anymore. So that's step one. I got the chains. I have 200 pounds of non-galvanized or non-zinc plated raw steel chain. It's heavy. It comes in big boxes. Shout out McMaster Car. Then I was thinking, well, how can I like move them around and kind of design with them in real time? And I got a bunch of rare earth magnet hooks, right? So
oh,
I can
okay.
hook them. So I can hoist up this steel plate, get it level, and then use the magnet hooks to kind of start arranging the chains and some carabiners. So I can kind of like, I'll have to cut the chain. So I'll have to commit to cutting them in, but I'll count off the lengths and cut pieces that are all like the same.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
just kind of like work with those as modules.
Right.
So I can kind of slide the magnets around and kind of like set them up and see how it looks. But the thing I need to do to avoid the treeless treehouse mistake is I have to really reinforce the outdoor shop and figure out like a really good kind of a really good way to suspend a 7 foot long, 3 foot wide piece of 3/16 plate steel, which is, you know, probably about 200 pounds.
You mean to suspend it so that the chains can hang where they're going to hang while you're
right.
welding
so
them?
I'm going to hang the steel plate like at about 6 feet.
Right.
So I can like stand just underneath it. I'll probably hang it a little bit higher than that. So I can like kind of work underneath it. And the thumbnail will be me, the action shot of this steel plate hanging and like welding this chandelier underneath it. Like mm-hmm. that's a great shot. Do it in like kind of dusk, golden hour. So like you're seeing the sparks, but it looks crazy. I think that whole process is, it's one that's been capturing my imagination for a long time. I think if I can put that visual together, it'll work for other people as well. But yeah, it's going to be a big experiment. I guess the way I'll test it is maybe I'll make like a, I don't want to blow the idea though on like a dinky little project.
Yeah.
You know, cause you kind of like blow half the wad and then it's like, you know.
Yeah. You can't go building this side table with it.
No, you gotta do it right. Go big or go home.
Yeah, it would be crazy too, because like whatever way it's oriented, like facing up or facing down, gravity will work in like opposite directions. So if you're welding the chain and it's pulling all of the links towards the earth and the tabletop is facing up the way it would normally be oriented, your chains are gonna like hang with a droop in one direction. But then if you flipped the tabletop upside down and then let gravity make everything convex and or concave instead of convex, when you flip the table back over, it would have like this crazy, like a tree root and tree branches,
yeah.
you know?
Right.
It'd be cool.
But
sounds fun.
It'll be fun. It'll be worth doing. It'll probably be a disaster that involves, that's really tedious, but I don't know. I'm pretty excited for it. We'll get it done. We'll see.
Might still
come
over
one day. I'll be like, oh, you're doing the chain thing now. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good luck, buddy.
It's just like, it's a lot of bridges to cross when you get there. You know where you're going. It's just, you know, figure out the route on the way.
Go big or go home.
Yeah. Chris, your big experiment is the kitchen next year, I guess, huh?
That's it. Moving on. No, actually, so if
Shoe wheel.
Shoe wheel.
Actually, I got so many when I put up the built-ins and people saw all the shoes in there. They're like, what happened to the
shoe wheel?
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of a wheel. Come on. It's just a one-dimensional wheel. I would say the thing that has been intriguing me the most lately has been more other types of content to do, whether it's different things within the channel or kind of like Ben just did, a separate channel that where you do something else. I think that's something that intrigues us all the time. I know like we've all talked about, remember Mike was going to make his like rainforest sounds at one point.
Yeah.
Is it still on the back burner?
No, but I will say the genre has exploded since my discovery of it. Yeah, so I should have jumped on that wave. I would have been surfing.
I don't know. Like, is that something that does everybody appeal to that, or does it make it extra appealing to us because like the type of content that we do takes such a long time to produce? You're just like, it'd be really nice to be able to do something that just took like, you know, I have an idea and then 3 hours later I'm done and I'm editing the video.
Well, is that the type of content that you're thinking about? Like, is that what's attractive?
Sean and I have been like talking about like what's something that we could do. What's like just because, all right. So basically every day, it seems like the way that it works is we get here and from like 7 to 8, it's just like talking about like ideas or whatever. There's like this whole hour that's fun. And like, it's just like a catch up planning, whatever hour. And so we're like, man, like it'd be nice if we could turn this into something. Like, we already do it anyway, but how do you do it? Like, what do you just have like camera set up and you come and you flip them on and it becomes, you know, not to stomp on Ben's thunder, but like a morning show type thing where it's just like the planning of the day or whatever. It probably wouldn't be that. Like, I'd want to do something that's more structured than that. So we're kicking around a couple ideas and I don't want them to be in the world of woodworking. They don't have to be totally detached. Like, there could be some crossover, but I want it to be like something new that's just fun. Just like something new that's, you know, when I started making YouTube videos, not that making YouTube videos now and what I'm doing isn't fun, but like it's a job. And so it'd be cool to have like, oh, what's something new that I could just make and watch grow and see if there's any potential there.
All right. Here's the opportunity. Here's the problems with the opportunity. And then here's how I'm sort of thinking about it is, yes, like I was following the very similar logic. Is it takes me a long time to make a high quality video that performs well.
Right.
Hot Tub's doing really good, but it was a big project. There's multiple times where I needed help moving a single part of it, let alone moving the whole thing. It takes up a bunch of space, which limits the amount of other projects I can do concurrently. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you hit that publish button, you're always a little bit nervous being like, oh, I put a lot of time into this one. I hope this one particularly does really well. So when you're doing that, it's natural to try to look for something that's consistent, that requires less logistical challenges, that can not perform as well as a hot tub video, but just do commensurate with the hours put into it. So it is really good to know your unit economics, right? To know that, in general, I get paid off of YouTube performance. So how many hours to create how many, not views, but how many minutes of watch time.
Right.
And it makes sense to try to experiment with different formulas that might beat the efficiency of what you're currently doing. The problem that complicates this is we all like to do better at what we're doing. So you'll do the first version of this thing that was designed to be more time efficient, but then you'll quickly think of
complicate it.
Oh, we could make it a little bit better. And if we added this segment, it would be even better. And then you start creeping into more and more time. And so that's the hard part. Like, that's where you have to be really honest with yourself. Am I just looking to do something that's like easy to get the low hanging fruit that I'm currently missing? And if that's the case, I think it's a pretty safe thing to do it. And, but if you're saying we also want to make this show really amazing, that's where it can actually get challenging.
Right.
Because there's an investment up front to launching something new. And the better and better and the more ambitious you are with it, the harder and harder it is to maintain those unit economics of small amount of time to decent amount of return.
Right.
So that's sort of the dynamic and the challenges that I'm sort of running into. I think the thing that's been helpful is that Rachel and I haven't been working together as long. So there's a little bit more kind of like, okay, we got to schedule this and we have to limit it to something. Mm-hmm. And it just has to get done in that time, which quarantines the sort of the creep. So it doesn't become this like, you know, massive undertaking that eats up way too much. But I can already feel that, like, you know, after we watched the first episode, we were like, oh, we could do this. We could add this. We could add this segment and add this. And it's already starting to get a little bit too, if we did all our ideas that we had after the first episode, it would defeat the purpose of it in the first place, which is test it out, do a little audience crossover. So the other thing that we kind of are trying to figure out that I didn't fully anticipate, like I think I go into these things like knowing, okay, I got this plan, but it's really easy to fall into a space that's in between a podcast and like a YouTube video that isn't quite as fast paced as one of our videos or information dense, and it isn't quite standalone enough to be an audio podcast. So I think that's the thing that's kind of hard to figure out is looking at those in between spaces, which are often don't do very well in the content world, and making sure that you're following into a distinctly consumable category.
All right. So here, let me, I'll give you a pitch of like what an idea could be. So I'm not saying this is what it would be, but just like one of the ideas that I've kicked around, and maybe this does fall into that weird in between, but from a production point of view, I think it'd be really cool if, you know, now that, so I think we're about to like finally turn this shop into our own. Like, I think we're going to sign a long-term lease and like put roots down here, basically.
Because right now you're subletting, basically, right? So that's, you would be taking it over.
Yeah, yeah. So we basically, you know, I was here with the other guy. COVID happened. Opportunity came along. We took over the full shop. It was just like month to month on a reduced basis. But I think it's going to go up, but we're going to get a long-term lease. We know we're going to be here, yada, yada, yada. So to that end, like, I'd like to start using the space more, like actually setting it up really the way that we want it set up. And so I think it'd be really cool, like in this office that I'm recording in right now, to just establish a wall and be like, okay, if we want to do this other channel thing, let's just get it set up. So it's kind of like a little set. We walk in, we flip on the light, hit record, we're going. There's none of that setup, tear down, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so one thing that always bugs me is like whenever you're in the market for something new, let's just pretend it was a table saw, and you go to Google and you type in like best table saw, and you find a website that's besttablesaws2021.com. And like the whole thing is just for affiliate marketing or money, whatever. All they are doing is like copying and pasting like what's from DeWalt's press release for whatever that table saw was. It, like, you know, there's nobody behind it. It's just like automated thing that's just like putting it together. I feel like it's gotten very hard to find good information. So like, for example, if I wouldn't do it for a table saw, but if I was doing it for something else, like a lot of times now I'll type in like best table saw Reddit. Because I know like, oh, if I go to Reddit, I'll get a human's touch. And so I thought it'd be cool. Like, what if you did it? Like, just take anything, for example, here, this first thing that's sitting on my desk, an external microphone that you can put on top of your camera on your hot shoe. Like, so make an episode where it's like, what would I buy? Essentially, like that could be the whole thing where like, so it'd be somewhat comedy based, but also you'd like get some good information where you'd sit down, you know, you'd go on Amazon, you'd go on a couple websites, you'd read through all the stuff, and you'd say like, okay, here's what I would buy as a human, like if I were in this position. So you're kind of like doing the legwork for a person who wants to buy that, but they know they're getting it from a human. And so people would stumble upon you that way because, like, you know, hopefully it becomes searchable for like external hard drive or whatever they're in the market for, and that YouTube video pops up, and then maybe they stick with it because like, oh, it was actually like a funny 10 minutes and I figured out what I would buy.
Chris Salamone, the most trusted name in woodworking news.
That's right. And camera equipment or other computer peripherals.
I like that. I like that kind of product review angle.
So the immediate pitfall here, sorry, not to cut you off, but the immediate pitfall that I see is that it doesn't have the payoff of you having the thing in your hand and being like, yeah, we made the right decision. If you do it that way.
Well, you gotta buy the thing. You gotta buy the thing and get it.
How do you get
that? Now it's getting complicated.
Exactly. Now it's like there's gonna be like a 2-week lead time for every episode and you have a whole cycle and the whole thing. Like, yeah. So I don't know if that's the idea, but I'm just saying like things like that are things that have been like popping into my head.
You just need to get it to where all these companies just send you free things.
Yeah, then you become unbox therapy.
Yeah, you just get, it's mail day. Guess what?
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a bunch of things to try out.
I have a cordless chainsaw right now for that very reason, which I still haven't tried out.
I was about to say, what are you doing with this chainsaw,
having it sit in a box so far.
You should do a woodworking project with a chainsaw. just trying to build furniture with a chainsaw.
Dude, I mean, I think I've said it here. That's how I thought furniture was made when I was little. I just thought like, oh, everything just starts off as a chunk of wood. Log. Yeah, and you just like remove the parts you don't want.
Yeah.
Turns joinery. Out, no.
Yeah. You know, it's an abstract concept. Yeah.
I think there's a few ways you could think about it. One is you could think about it from a top down, right? Think of like one big idea that sort of creates the show, kind of like what Hot Ones is. Mm-hmm. The other way is you could take like a segmented approach and be like, what's like a series of 3 to 5 minute segments that we could consistently do? And then if we add 4 or 5 of them together, we have like a 25 to 30 minute show.
Mm-hmm. I bet, Chris, you would be consistent with it, right? Hell, you know, yeah. Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports. He does like pizza reviews.
Ooh.
But he literally does a pizza review every single day
because
he lives in like New York City or whatever. So he's like, there's enough places. I'm literally going to try every single pizza place. But that didn't pop off for a long time. It was the consistency that eventually, you know, if every video brings in a few people, it all adds up, you know? I feel like Chris could do that with Pop-Tarts and breakfast items.
I did have that idea for cereal, but I was like, I'll run out of cereals in like 40 episodes.
But you won't. No, because then you can go through like all the
start
generics.
Be like, that's true, yeah. Like instead of
generics
loops,
versus
like the
name brand or
fruity,
name brand,
fruity
yeah.
Hoops or whatever they'll be called.
Who makes the best Fruity Pebbles? Yeah, because there's got to be like 8 different generics.
Right. Like, I'll be going to all the
different
grocery
stores. Somebody
eating
cereal on a show sounds terrible.
That's an incredible job to have, though.
That would be great. Give
if you're lucky enough.
Eat more cereal too.
Yeah.
I like it though.
I don't know where it is.
We'll keep thinking. We'll keep workshopping. Send us your segment ideas for Chris.
Yeah, if anybody has any thoughts on what I said of how I could overcome that obstacle of not having the product, or I don't know. Like, I guess it depends on what the product is, if you need that payoff or not, but maybe we just put our money where our mouth is and we buy everything and then we have a segment where it's like updating from 2 weeks ago, we recommended this and then we got it and it sucks.
You just get it on a cycle to where every few weeks or every couple of weeks, new products are coming in. So as you're unboxing, you're filming for the next or something.
Yeah, or like every episode, it's like, it's about this, but then it has the update from whatever was filmed a week ago or whatever.
Yeah, you're kind of like the white Marquez Brownlee of the woodworking game in terms of like your size and shape.
That's true. Yeah, we do have build. A similar build.
I would trust your value determination skills, like looking at specs, figuring out the price and the like ergonomics or the like value of something, same way.
Yeah, I would too.
What would I buy?
Yeah, I think you'd be very trustworthy from especially like tool recommendation standpoints.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I can parlay that into other things. I'm a 4-star review reader. That's where I go. That's the nuanced review on Amazon.
Yeah, because then you know it's not too biased. They're not too excited about what they've bought.
That's right.
Mike, what about you? You've experimented with terrazzo, white concrete, epoxy sinks, roofs.
Boom.
Where does it end?
Hair products. What's next, buddy?
Dude, it never ends. That's the whole point, right? It's just always try something new. There's a few things that I would like to kind of continue to experiment with, largely being terrazzo. I experimented trying to figure out concrete mix. That way I could figure out different aggregates to sort of put into that to grind down and create terrazzo. I would like to follow through there. And then also, I've done a lot of like epoxy terrazzo testing. I just haven't gotten that like 10 out of 10 result to feel confident going into something the size of a table or a countertop with. So that just needs a little bit more due diligence to where I can kind of workshop that the way I need to. But I think just experimenting is like the core of just like modern builds, really. You know, it's just like everything is at least one thing new. Like, I know I feel this way whenever I'm editing videos, but if it's all the same technique that I've already done before, it's like hard to make a voiceover because you fall back to the shorthanded version of everything. But whenever you're trying something new, there's so much meat on the bone to talk about. And I feel like that makes a video way more dynamic. So yeah, I would just like every video to have something new, you know, and just keep experimenting. But
yeah, that's a good point. I've been talking to some artificial intelligence companies that I'm sort of advising for that are trying to build software that can design stuff. And they were looking at some of my old videos and they kind of called me out a little bit. They're like, yeah, you know, so we could just like feed in like some of the you know, these designs. And for example, you wouldn't have to design any more concrete coffee tables. Like, the AI could just do them all. I'm like, yeah, I already kind of got that as a point. I think I'm done with those.
Yeah. I've made all of those. No.
But yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, if you start to see the pattern, then a machine could do it. Then why are we doing it?
Yeah, for sure. And man, I'm just tackling like different scale of things. You know, like everything on this shed is an experiment. After I get the roof done, I got to figure out how to like run electrical through the whole thing, you know, and then I got to, you know, do all the wiring for lighting and a bunch of new stuff. So just keeping the learning cap on.
Yeah. And that's why like the renovation game is going to keep you doing new stuff for like probably like the next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then you'll probably want a little routine after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to get back to some furniture. That's the exciting part about getting the workshop pretty much ready to build into, is I can take some time, sofas, beds, the essentials for moving into the house that I've kind of let slip, where my mattress is still on the floor and I still have like the hand-me-down sofa. I'll be able to build some DIY versions of those. I don't know, you know, do the dang thing.
Beds and sofas coming soon.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom. All right. What have you guys been watching? What are you obsessed with? What's new? What's good? Give me those hot tips. I need a new show. All right. While you're thinking.
Yeah, while we
think. I'll go with mine, because it's not a show. Because I'm all out of shows right now. Brett McAfee from Skull and Spades did a really nice YouTube video where he restored an 80-year-old vice. So him and Jesse, they helped out this family where this like lifelong metal worker passed away, lived to a ripe old age. And he left behind a treasure trove of metalworking stuff. And Jesse and Brett went down there for like 3 or 4 days, helped them clean it out, organize them, found buyers for a lot of the really valuable equipment. And Brett brought back this like really big, like heavy duty vise. It's beefy. And it was completely covered in rust. The jaws were broken, like the metal was actually cracked. Cleaned it all up, like did this little bit of brass lettering on it that looks really amazing. You've seen it, Mike. It looks beautiful.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like the way he blackened all the metal and everything, super clean.
But he also had to do some, like I've seen a lot of these restoration videos where it's just like brush off the rust, soak it in evaporate rust, you know, clean it up, oil it, done. But he had to actually fabricate new custom jaws, which he had to weld together and then machine down so they would fit. And he doesn't have like a big, you know, machine shop. He's just using angle grinders, you know, a bench grinder or a belt grinder and basic sort of welding tools. He also had to fabricate custom machine screws that would fit into these weird holes. And the way he did that was really clever. So check it out. Skull and Spades. It's a really good video. Vice, 80-year-old vice restoration.
Chris, you're up. What do you got?
Okay, so I guess I'll just go with what I've been watching a lot of on YouTube lately. So remember maybe a couple months ago now, I was talking about how I got the iPad and I've made a return into my interest into drawing and sketching. So I found that like the style that I've really gravitated to and that I've been practicing at with my like furniture and stuff is industrial design sketching. So a couple YouTube channels that I've been watching a lot of lately, there's one guy named Robert Laszlo Kiss. Then there's another guy, Sketch-A-Day. Like most of the videos I'm watching seem to be really old that they put up like 2 years ago. I don't know if that's because like those were their greatest hits. So that's what it's serving me. But they're both really good artists, especially in that like kind of style. And I don't know. I just really like the aesthetic of the industrial design sketches. So check them out if you like drawing and see if that aesthetic speaks to you. I'm hoping that I want to eventually like make some artwork in that style of the pieces that I do. So not necessarily.
So if I just Google industrial sketching, I'm going to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, probably industrial design sketching. Industrial sketching might be something different. I don't know. I'm going to try it now too.
Because I'm curious what you're talking about. Because I just don't know what you mean.
Yeah. So it'd be like product design sketch and stuff like that. Like
I see. Yeah. It has where like you're getting a lot of the you get. It's like what you know those books that you get when you're a kid that teach you how to draw, where it shows all the like first make a box and then make the torso inside of the box. You know what I mean? Those sort of things.
Right. It has like a lot of like contour lines and that kind of stuff to like really try to show the shape of something.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yep. So industrial design sketching.
And so these are videos where it's just a time lapse of that.
Yeah, kind of teaching. It'd be like tutorial, like here's how to like think about shadow and perspective and line weights and all the different elements that go into it.
Nice. Okay. My recommendation this week is very short. It's a minute and a half long video by the comedian Tim Dillon. He had a video, I think it's just called The Wallet, but it's like a fake movie trailer. You know how people will make like a spoof movie trailer?
Yeah.
And like the idea for it is like, dad died, but he had like $10,000 of Bitcoin 10 years ago or whatever. And so he's like, we got to get this password. And it's like the most dramatic thing just to get the Bitcoin password. And it's like, that's what the whole trailer's around. It's funny. I don't want to ruin the punchline too much, but it's like, yeah, it was one of those kind of like almost a realistic thing. Like they've got a fortune on their hands, but they just don't know the login password.
Yeah.
So, oh man. I thought it was a funny little one liner, but anyways, Tim Dillon, he's a funny guy. Check him out.
Wild boy.
But we appreciate you guys listening every week. If you got any topic suggestions or questions you think we should answer, go ahead and hit us up on Instagram. I am at Modern Builds. Ben is at Benjamin Ueda. And Chris is at Four Eyes Furniture. We didn't really get an opportunity to give a thanks for the massive sellout that we had on the clamp sale last week. So thank you for that. We appreciate it big time. And stay on the lookout for new products and developments. Until next time, we'll see you. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.